Welcome to Thursday night at the ranch, I guess. I have been teaching the work modeled on Jon Kabat-Zinn, who started about 20 years ago at UMass Medical Center, what's called mindfulness-based stress reduction. And I first started a program shortly after being inspired by the Bill Moyers presentation that John was on. Started a program at Sequoia Hospital here, and then program started at Kaiser, and I taught there a few times, and then started at Stanford, where I am now teaching it. And it's quite a blessing to be at a medical center and to be integrating this into medicine, which is really my love of bringing the mind into healthcare. The mind has a very, very, very critical role. We made a big mistake in medicine a number of years ago, a number of centuries ago, where the politics of the time said you ought to separate the mind and the body because the spirit or soul, which was part of the mind, was kind of owned by the church. And science, and they were coming in conflict. So the way to resolve that conflict was to pretend that they were separate. And in Eastern culture and in Eastern forms of medicine, that split never happened. So it never had to be reunited. In this country, we had to bridge it back together again, and in some ways we're still in that process. It's still occurring, but it's making great strides because it's scientific. Makes sense. You know, how you think, if you bring up a thought right now that is a uncomfortable, scary thought, you will have a physiologic change in your body, your heart rate, your breathing, the chemistry of your body. Even the activity of the brain will change. And so that what we do with our mind is one with the body. And what we're learning is that there's a lot of ways that we can utilize the natural birthright of our control of our mind to help us in our healthcare, to make us healthier and happier in our lives. I want to just kind of share with you what originally got me into this practice. It was when I was 14 years old, I was a typical stupid dumb kid, and remained the stupid dumb kid for a long time. But one day I was walking home, I was a wrestler, and I was training on a Sunday, and I was walking home in the rain, and I was on the sidewalk, and all of a sudden I'm flying through the air. And a car had come up on the sidewalk and hit me, but I didn't see it before or after. And as I was flying through the air, I heard a voice. I don't know if it was just a thought in my mind or an actual voice or what, but it felt like there was a message as I was flying through the air. And the message said, "This is not an accident. This is to teach you. Pay attention." And that experience really is the foundation for all I'm doing now in my life. My practice as a dentist is treating pain management, and I learned through the experience things about pain and working with pain that weren't in the textbooks at the time. I knew because I applied mindfulness to my physical symptoms. It also made me believe in kind of fate or purpose, that somehow this experience, whether it was a true accident or not, somehow it made sense to me kind of intuitively that I was supposed to be there. I was supposed to have that experience. And it gave me a deep trust of life, of the process of life, that whatever came up for me, I felt like the Bible, give me this day my daily bread. I felt like whatever happened to me, my work was to open to that experience. That was my daily bread, and that's what I had to taste and eat and have it nurture me. And so it gave me a great trust to go through the experiences of my life. And we all have a full plate in life. I haven't found out any ways to get any get out of jail free tickets. You know, life happens, and sometimes it's very intense birth contractions, and sometimes it's a little easy. But the one thing that has never, ever, I think, failed me, the only thing I could say that hasn't failed me is staying with the process, opening to the process, and trusting each moment as deeply as I can, and going to the center of the experience, whether it's emotional center of the experience or the physical center of the experience. That's where the transformation comes from. That's where the healing is. Is going to the center of the experience. And so as a kid growing up, I felt like a stranger in a strange land a lot, because I just had this attitude, whatever happened, that, you know, if my girlfriend broke up with me and I was sad, I would really try to feel that sadness. You know, if I got sick, I would really try to feel as all the sensations in my body that I could. If I had the flu, instead of, you all know the American mantra, by the way? You should know it. Do you remember? You say it all the time. It's oh shit, right? Instead of doing the oh shit mantra, can we put that on tape? We already did, I guess. I would like say, oh great, I'm sick, you know, I got a flu, I don't get to feel these feelings all the time. And I would go in there and I would really feel, you know, like achiness in my body, of, you know, the temperature, all this stuff. And it was, I almost felt a little kind of strange, but there was something inside that felt right about that. And in my body, I had a lot of pain after the accident, and I would concentrate and bring my full attention to that sensation. And when I started to study meditation, I was like shocked that there, so pleasantly, that there was actually a system. There were other people that were saying the same thing, you know, telling you to go into your sensation, tell you to not judge it, to basically feel it and experience the raw, you know, sensation just as it was. And I started to use that with more skill and more confidence, and had some very profound experiences that showed me that, yeah, there's something here, and that this is a very, very, very valuable tool. And I think this is really a birthright that we all have, to use our mind to bring it to our experience of life, and to soothe ourselves, to soothe our bodies, to soothe ourselves as far as our health, our emotional health and physical health, and to cultivate greater happiness because of the healing and completion that happens when we actually have an experience, when we're in harmony with the experience of life. Whether it's something we would vote for is really irrelevant. It's here. And when it's here, you know, what this basic experience taught me is, if it's here, it's here as an opportunity. There's something here that I can grow through. I want to read you a little something that kind of speaks to that. There's a book called The Heart Aroused by David White, W-H-Y-T-E. And David White is a poet. And someone asked him to write a poetry book for business people. And what would business people want a poetry book for? Well, this corporate guru said that he felt that we needed poetry book because business is really about creativity, and there's poetry is a great resource of creativity. And so he wrote this book. And in the introduction to the book, he's talking about what the book does and doesn't do. And I was reading this, and something clicked in for me. It was one of those things where you just kind of live a question. And one of the questions I was living was, naturally, I'm kind of pessimistic. You know, I have what I call strong Eeyore mind. Like, you know, why does this always happen to me? Why does it never work out? Why does it always end up in this, you know? And it's like a very, very, very strong negative side to my mind. And yet, in the most intense situations, because of this core belief that I have, I can be so open and so trusting of life. And I wondered how in the same mind could this exist? You know, how can you be so pessimistic and so optimistic at the same time? And when I read this, something clicked in for me. It said, this book does not offer easy answers as to the way that home life and work life, career and creativity, soul life and seniority can be brought together. So what it doesn't do is show you all these things that seem to pull in different directions. Your soul life and getting ahead in the work world. Your work life and home life seem to pull you in different directions. Your soul and spirituality and creativity seem to pull you in different directions. But what it does do is chart the veritable San Andreas fault of modern American psyche. The personality's wish to have power over experience, to control all events and consequences. So what he's saying is there's a certain aspect of our mind, he's calling the personality, that wants to have things be the way it thinks things should be. If only my parents were the way I think they should have been. If only I was brought up the way I think I should have been brought up. If only my teachers were the way I think they should have been. If only my boss was different. If only my mate would straighten up and fly right. If only my kids would listen to me. If only my parents, you know, whatever. And it tries to make things fit that concept that it thinks things should be. And the real sad part about the personality is that it does it to yourself inside. If only you were different. If only you were a certain way. If only you could had this quality. If only you acted this way. If only you were smarter, prettier, you know, younger, whatever. It doesn't matter. The personality is trying to mold things. Okay? But there's this other aspect called the soul. He calls the soul. And the soul's wish is to have power through experience, no matter what that might be. So the soul is naturally non-judgmental. It doesn't matter to the soul what's arising in life, because the soul's goal is to grow through the experience, not in spite of it, not around it, not by suppressing it, not by changing it, altering it, making it fit its preferences. It simply wants to open up and experience and grow through that which is given, that which is here, life. And so I saw that I could relate to life from personality and be kind of pessimistic and have Mr. Eeyore come out, or I could open up to life, however it was, and try to kind of work through the soul. So we have a lot of choices in the way that we focus ourselves. One of the ways that I use the mind a lot in working, one of the opportunities I have in the program at Stanford is we see a lot of people who are taking the course because of physical illness. They're referred by their doctors, just like writing a prescription. I want you to take this course to help with the pain or the cancer diagnosis or the insomnia or whatever it is that you have. And there's a very good reason for that. It's very good medicine. The way that we use our mind can deeply change the physiology of the body. And many, many, many years ago, it seems like now, I remember going to lunch with the doctor, and I used to work at San Andreas Health Council, which was a holistic center in Palo Alto many years ago. And biofeedback at that time was heresy, because the medical textbook said you couldn't control the autonomic nervous system. As a matter of fact, they called it the involuntary nervous system. You couldn't change your heart rate. You couldn't change your blood pressure. You had no control over these things because they were part of the autonomic nervous system, the involuntary. But fortunately, the meditators in the East didn't read the textbooks, and they didn't know that you could actually do that. So they did it anyway. And now things have shifted so dramatically. So one of the jewels that we have is that we have this wonderful mind. And I love the term mindfulness. And if you think of the mind as having like mind molecules, okay, now we have just a certain amount of mind molecules. It's like if we had a drop of red ink, and we put that red ink into a large body of water, it just disperses. There's no power to that in the water, no effect to the water. But we take that drop and we put it into a small glass of water, and it turns the water bright red. Now we have this wonderful mind with these mind molecules, and what we do is we diffuse this wonderful gift of energy. We diffuse it in time. How much of our attention is spread out into the past. And we diffuse it into the future, which is a real crazy thing because the future is just an hallucination anyway. But we spend a lot of time hallucinating. I mean, whatever you're thinking about tomorrow, I guarantee it's going to be different than you think. So we take this energy and we disperse it in time. And diffuse it. And we also diffuse it in space, that we focus on what other people might be thinking and what's going on over there and, you know, worrying about this thing or looking at that thing. And very little of that mind molecule attention is focused inside in our lives and is concentrated into the present moment where we live. Where the tire meets the road. We live in this internal now, but all this energy is everywhere but there. So when we bring our attention into our body and bring it into the present moment, you're sitting here right now, this is the most peaceful place in your life. Even if you're uncomfortable, even if your body's in pain, even if you're mind is agitated. This is the most peaceful place in life because it's finite. Even if your body's uncomfortable and your mind's agitated, it's just so much discomfort. You can deal with it if you bring your attention there. You can deal with what's actually happening in the present moment because it has that quality of finiteness. The future and the past are infinite. You can ruminate about the past as much as you want. And the future is totally infinite. So you can worry about something that's going on and you can get anxious about something infinitely great, a thought. You can get infinitely reactive in your body and mind. There's no limit to that. But what's actually in the present moment is finite. So this is the most peaceful place in your life. Now, as far as the body and healthcare is concerned, that we basically have a system that is geared towards reactivity or peacefulness. We have the sympathetic nervous system and the adrenaline, which as soon as we have that thought about worrying about something in the future, we have a reaction. And this signals a whole change in our physiology, and it also creates a whole change in our brain. If we do studies of the brain, we can see that the activity of the brain changes where it is. Now, we have the oldest kind of the oldest part of the brain is the respiratory center, the brain stem, but the place, the oldest part of the brain where we actually have some sort of motivation about what we do is the limbic system, the fight or flight system, which is millions and millions of years old. You know, started with the fish before they even came on land. The oldest part of the nervous system development. And then we have the neocortex, which is our gem, particularly the frontal part, which can plan, which can choose. Now, you noticed as we were doing that meditation and you were focusing on the edge of your nostril and then you moved, there was something inside that controls that movement that said, okay, I'm going to focus in here and now I'm going to shift. I'm going to move here. And you concentrated there in another area and you felt things that were going on that you weren't feeling before because you brought your attention there. And this had a physical effect. You might have felt changes in your body. You might have felt during the process yourself settling down. These are very real physical changes that we could monitor, but we don't need to because we've got the greatest monitoring system ever invented, our awareness, our brains. I think like the Dylan song, you don't need to be a weatherman to know which way the wind blows. You don't need these machines to tell you what's going on inside. You can feel that you feel more peaceful. You feel more open. You feel more happy. And this is not just a superficial thing, but there's a lot of things going on inside. And we have this old brain and new brain is like a seesaw. When one's active, the other one's kind of quieted, shut down. When the old reactive brain is the one that's up, the other one, the newer brain, is asleep, basically. So that's why if you're walking on a beach and you're trying to work out some sort of problem that you've been looking at for a while and you just relax and let go, all of a sudden you come up with these wonderful ideas. It's because you have the more creative part of the brain that's being awake in that peaceful state. Whereas you're trying and you're reacting and you're struggling to do something and your reactive part of the brain is dominant, that's a very stupid part of the brain. There's only two choices there. You're going to run or you're going to fight. And this is why we see in the world so many reactions where we only seem to see these two choices. Well, with our body and our health care, we want to kind of start taking better control of ourselves and to choose peacefulness. Because it's a very healthy thing to do. And we have the birthright to do that. And this is the gift of this mindfulness practice, is that we start to learn how to manage ourselves and how, when we get into these reactive states, how to walk ourselves out of it. Walk ourselves back to peacefulness. It's not like we won't get reactive. We won't get angry at something. We won't get emotional. But we can now notice that and walk ourselves down to something that's more kind and gentle and effective. So, any questions?
How do you deal with planning?
Planning, good. That's a good question. It comes up a lot. Planning is actually happening in the present moment. Planning is a very good thing to do. But recognize that your planning is something that's a mental process, that you're sitting in the present moment and you're looking at your options for the future, of what direction you want to point yourself towards.
Yeah. But aren't you dealing with the future? Meaning, aren't you kind of hallucinating?
No, I look at it as looking at options of the direction to take yourself. Let's say you want to, you could be planning from everything from going to the hardware store to what you want to do in your career. The example that I use a lot is if we're trying to build something, we want to build a rocket ship, we would be very wise to plan our building process, plan the materials, plan what we think would work, but to recognize that that's just a plan. As you go along in the process, you stay as present as you can in the process, and therefore you will notice that something's working or not working, and you would change and alter the plan because of what you're experiencing in that moment. You might change direction a little bit. Well, that's not going to power the rocket ship, so we've got to change this so we have something that powers it better. So planning, recognizing that planning is a process that's happening in the present moment. Don't mistake the planning for the doing. All right. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Anything else?
Have you ever experimented with taking blood pressure when somebody meditates? Which is it? Because I've tried that in the doctor's office and it didn't work. Okay, my blood pressure is high, so now I'm going to try to make myself in a meditative state and then see if we can get a better result. But it didn't work. I thought it would.
Well, just because it didn't work doesn't mean that it
didn't help.
Soothe. And it wasn't good practice. I mean, your quality of investigating that is whether you see we focus so much on outcome, particularly if you do something just once. In a way, outcome is putting the cart before the horse. What I would focus on is the fact that you recognize that you wanted to do something to soothe yourself. And that you were practicing and kind of investigating that. And if you're taking care of the horse and putting the horse first, the horse is you and the qualities that you bring to yourself. And so if you're doing that and you're doing it out of kindness and love and caring, then you're going to nurture that. And if that's what's happening, then the research shows that you will tend to lower your blood pressure. If you're doing it to see if you can, I want to get here and I want to do this. It's like falling asleep. You can't make yourself fall asleep. You can't make yourself relax. Relaxation is something that comes out of the opening and letting yourself fall into the present moment and fall into your natural peacefulness. You fall asleep. You don't work yourself into sleep. And so you might, by being mindful of that practice, and the next time you go in, you do it again, and you see what kind of things you might, skills that you might cultivate that would make you more able to do that because of the qualities that you're developing, the way that you're taking care of the horse.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
The whole purpose of all of this is kindness. To me, the whole purpose of sitting in meditation is so that you can connect with yourself. You can be with the most precious person in your life, yourself, the most important person in your life. And you can choose kindness. You can sit in kindness no matter what's going on. Okay. I thought that we would close with about another 10 minutes of sitting. So let's, with that quality of kindness, of taking care of yourself, of nurturing, of befriending yourself, just see how you can kind of cultivate and use your natural skills to just be at peace for a few moments. A peace that is deep enough to be there even if you're not at peace. Even if your mind were agitated, that you could hold that agitation in peace and kindness. Even if your body was restless, you could hold it in stillness.